So transformed were they by the resurrection that they were prepared to face anything that was thrown at them. A few days before Easter, when Jesus had been arrested, what did the disciples do? They fled. They were afraid. They ran away. And even now we read, this passage starts off, on the evening of that first day of the week when the disciples were together with the doors locked for fear of the Jewish leaders. They were afraid. Some of you have got the older versions that says for fear of the Jews. I think it was the Jewish leaders they were fearful of. I don't think it was the crowd. I think it's a much better translation. But they were fearful. They were fearful of the people who were outside. And yet, having met with Jesus, they undid the doors. They went out and they were fearless in speaking to others around them. So much so that they were virtually all prepared to suffer themselves and eventually to face execution because they knew the overwhelming joy of Jesus. So what is it then that we're missing here? When we look at this account, what is it that perhaps we need to take a fresh look at and see for ourselves that might make our joy, if not be overwhelming in the way that theirs was who encountered Jesus face to face, last longer than a single day on a special weekend? Well, this reading has got two accounts of Jesus appearing. The first was on Easter Day. And it was on the evening of the first day of the week, and the disciples were together, locked away. And this passage fits very neatly with the account Luke gives us of the disciples on the Emmaus Road, when some of the disciples had fled Jerusalem, also fearful, headed towards Emmaus, and then come back and joined the other disciples in the locked room. So there they were in this room, locked away, probably where they'd celebrated the Passover meal, fearful of what was going on, and Jesus appears in their midst. And then the second appearance we have here is a week later, where Jesus comes and speaks specifically to Thomas, who hadn't been with the disciples on that first Easter day. And the reason we see that Jesus did these things, and John writes them down, we see at the end of the passage, verse 31, these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. John records all these facts so that we might share in what those first disciples knew on that first Easter. So, let's have a little look. What is resurrection about? What is it that so convinced those first disciples? What was it that they saw that we need to own to? And I just want to identify three things. They all begin with R. R, resurrection, think of resurrection, you'll think of these things too. So the first is redeemed life. Redeemed life. When we look at the resurrection accounts, we see something about Jesus that is very familiar, but something that is very different too. Here in John 20, we see that the disciples were in a room with the doors locked for fear of the Jewish leaders when Jesus comes and stands among them and talks to them. He shows them his hands and his feet, so that they can see where the nails went. A week later, he does the same thing. The disciples were in the same room. The doors were locked, it tells us in verse 26. Jesus came and stood among them, says, peace be with you, shows them his hands and his feet. And on both occasions, he talks to them. Back in John 20, at the beginning of this passage, we heard this, those of us who were in the park last Sunday morning read this, and Mary comes to the tomb, and Jesus is there, but she doesn't recognize him. She thinks he is the gardener. And it's only when he speaks her name that she realizes that it's not the gardener, But it's Jesus standing with her. In Luke's account of the resurrection, we have something similar. After Jesus rises from the dead, the disciples who are going from Jerusalem to Emmaus on the Emmaus Road suddenly find somebody else walking with them. And they talk with him for 7 miles as they walk to Jerusalem, to Emmaus. And when they get to Emmaus, they say, come in and have a meal with us. And then they have a meal and break bread. And as bread is broken, their eyes are opened and they recognize that the person they've been walking with and talking with for 7 miles is none other than Jesus. Their eyes were opened. You see, what these accounts show us, and what we see specifically here in John, is that resurrection life looks different to the life that we know now. It's familiar enough to recognize, and yet it is different. We sometimes have this view, I think, of the resurrection as being Jesus. He's been nailed to a cross, he's died, and he comes back, and there he is again, just the same as he was before. But he's not. He is, but he is so much more too. His resurrection body enables others to recognize him. It's a physical body, yes, it can be touched, yes, he can eat, he can talk. But it's at the same time, it's a body that not everybody recognizes all the time. It's a body that seems to be able to come and go and even travel from one place to another, from location to location. And it's important that we understand that, I think, that resurrection life looks different. And I say that because that's where we're headed. We are headed towards this different life. Paul, writing in Corinthians, discusses resurrection bodies, and he says, all flesh is not the same. There are heavenly bodies and there are earthly bodies. He puts it quite plainly. There's a difference. There's a difference between the body we have now and the body that we will have after we die. But Paul also says that Jesus' resurrection is the first fruits. The first fruits. And other fruit will follow. What he's saying is that for everyone who places their hope and their trust in Jesus, this is what redeemed life, resurrection life, life after death looks like. Death is not the end. Death is the gateway to this new life, the beginning of something special that one day we will share in too. Hold on to that picture. That should bring us hope as we face the pain and the sadness that death always brings. We've had a very close friend of ours unexpectedly die this week in his early 40s. The hope we cling on to is that he is sharing in this redeemed life now. Not the life that we know, but the life that we will know, the life that Jesus demonstrated in those resurrection appearances. So that's the first thing. Resurrection shows us redeemed life. The second R is a renewed purpose. We see that the disciples get a fresh perspective. Jesus comes among them and he speaks peace be with you. And he goes on to say, as the Father has sent me, I am sending you. And he gives them the gift of the Holy Spirit. In John's Gospel, the resurrection and Pentecost are kind of wrapped up together. It's in Luke's account that Luke separates them. He says, go. Now remember, here are those early disciples locked away for fear of the Jewish leaders. Disciples that had fled when Jesus had been arrested. Disciples that stood at a distance and watched what happened. Fearful, terrified. And Jesus says, go. You're not staying in this place anymore. You're not staying hidden away. You're not to be locked up. You are to go. You see, his commission was to give them a renewed purpose. No longer were they just to follow by doing what Jesus did when they were with him, but they were to do what Jesus did without him, but with the power of his Spirit, making disciples, healing the sick, bringing transformation and hope. He doesn't leave them on his own. He sends them out, and they are to go and proclaim the gospel. And when we move on and we read the Acts of the Apostles, we see account after account of them doing just that, risking everything to proclaim the purpose. Imprisonment, attack, oppression, persecution. They risked it all, and most of them died for what they were doing, because Jesus said, go. This is what I've called you to do. You have got a purpose, and this is what I want you to do. I want to tell you about a man called John. John was born to Christian parents, but when he became a teenager, he wasn't very interested in church. He spent his time rebelling. He discovered drink and drugs. When he was 15, he invented a national insurance number so that he could get a job. And the job was putting the lids of paint cans onto the tins. It wasn't a very kind of interesting sort of job. At the end of his teens, he got a job as a debt collector and a loan salesman. And he was a kind of canny guy, and he set up a number of businesses. And he made quite a bit of money. And through his success, he funded a lavish lifestyle. He had a nice, comfortable home, a car, holidays, and a family. But he made some mistakes along the way and borrowed too much money to finance his business. And slowly, in the early 90s, his world began to fall apart. And in 1992, he had no choice but to declare that he was bankrupt. He lost virtually everything and found himself with debts of £78,000. That's a lot of money today. Back in the 90s, it was even more. He lost virtually everything except his house. And somehow or other, through a strange series of events, he kept on to the house but had to let it in order to have some income. And he let it to a guy who happened to be a pastor from Norway. And this pastor shared his faith with John. And John found Jesus. He found also that he had a renewed purpose in his life, a purpose to do something to help other people who had got into similar situations. But you know what happened for John was that things didn't, you know, I've encountered Jesus, it's all going to be okay now. Things didn't get better for him at first. In fact, life started to get worse. His financial situation deteriorated. His family fell apart. He was left with no option but to camp in a friend's bedroom, struggling just to find the money to feed himself and his children. He hit rock bottom, and that was the point where he managed to sort things out. He found a job in a financial services company, and that gradually enabled him to begin to pay off his debts. But he was a Christian by now, and his instincts were telling him to do something to help other people. And so in 1996, 2 years after finding work again, he decided that he was going to put his life in God's hands, and he was going to offer money advice to others. With a £10 gift, he registered a charity called Christians Against Poverty. John Kirkby began a work that has now transformed the lives of thousands of people who also had hit rock bottom. He encountered Jesus. His life began to change. He found a new purpose. Like the risen disciples, life wasn't suddenly easy. It didn't all fall into place. But he said, I'm going to go for this. Just as Jesus said, go to them, I'm going to go. And I'm going to follow where Jesus takes me. And I'm going to try and do something to help others. And we know, don't we? We're a part of Christians Against Poverty in Ealing. We can see the difference that that is making in the lives of people around this country. a £10 gift and the confidence to step out knowing that Jesus would lead him forward. Jesus offers a renewed purpose to those who trust him. So he offers a redeemed life. He offers a renewed purpose. The third thing is Jesus restores hope. On that first Easter day, the disciples were terrified and hiding away. And what do we read? It says in verse 20, after he had said this, peace be with you, he showed them his hands and his side, and the disciples were overjoyed when they saw the Lord. They had seen Jesus die. They had stood at a distance as all those events happened. They were in utter despair. Hope was lost, they thought, forever. The movement they'd been a part of had come to an end. But in a few words, Jesus says, no, hope is being restored. If Jesus is alive, all things are possible. And then there's Thomas, isn't there? Thomas, I think he gets a bit of a raw deal in history. Thomas wasn't there on that first Easter day. He struggles to believe. He's not had the same experience as the other disciples. And so Jesus appears again a week later. And he comes and he speaks specifically to Thomas. He says to Thomas, put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand. Put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe. And what does Thomas say? I love that phrase. My Lord and my God. My Lord and my God. You see, as we look at these experiences, we see that Jesus, just through a few words, through a few simple actions, comes and brings hope to people again. He brings hope. He brought hope to those first disciples, and he brings hope to others too. I want to tell you about another person called Paul. Paul was brought up on one of the roughest estates in Manchester. His father was an alcoholic. He left school at 15 when he ran away from home. He joined a gang, got involved in crime, ended up in prison. On release, he joined the army in an attempt to rebuild his life, and he had two failed marriages. In 1994, he walked into a church and he found himself doing an Alpha course. As a result of that, he gave his life to Christ and was filled with the resurrection power of Jesus. And he decided that he was going to do something to help others. So he started visiting prisoners and eventually set up an organization to care for ex-offenders. He set up a homeless project and various support courses. Under his leadership over these last few years, Alpha in Prison has spread into virtually every prison in the UK and in 76 countries across the world. Paul is now ordained. He now leads a church in London. Through the resurrection, Jesus brings hope where there is none. Hope even to troubled teenagers who find themselves in gangs. It's kind of very real to us this week, isn't it? But Jesus can bring hope. He can bring hope to those in prison. He can bring hope to those who are troubled. He can bring hope to you and to me where there is none. Jesus restored hope to the disciples. He restored hope to Paul Cowley. He will restore hope if we ask him. So then this morning, as we continue to think about the resurrection of Jesus, I hope we see so much more than a man dying and coming back to his old life. What the Gospels show us is a new redeemed life that Jesus has. The life that God always intended for us. The life that got damaged by the fall that God is going to restore when we die. The life that one day we will share in with him. He offers a life too that this side of death can have a renewed purpose, a restored hope. I wonder what you need to hear today. Perhaps there are some of us here who are frightened of death, frightened of what it might mean, of what lies the other side. And Jesus says, this is what it looks like. Don't be frightened. This is what I've done for you. That death will not be the end. Death will be the beginning. Maybe you're struggling to find purpose in your life. And you need to hear the risen Jesus speaking to you and leading you forward like he did for John Kirkby. In some way, he wants to use you to go and do something. Maybe you're like Paul Cowley. Your life just feels hopeless at the moment. Everything is crashing around you. And you need to hear Jesus offer those words of hope. Just keep a few moments quiet. Let's just ask him what it is he's saying to you, what he wants to do for you, and then we're going to pray. So what is it that you need to know today? Is it you need to know the promise of redeemed life? Do you need to know renewed purpose? Do you need to know restored hope?